Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Segem, tackling your questions in studio this evening. Nesan Nair from Sasfin Securities and Waldo Duplessis from Nitrogen Fund Managers as well. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or pop us a tweet at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us this evening. Well, the volatility continues, and today it's markets globally pretty apprehensive of where things are at as far as U.S.-China trade negotiations are concerned. Nesan, how are you feeling?
I think today everybody was just elated at the GDP number. It was anticipated. Ever since we had the 3.2 contraction in the first quarter, the technical recession was on the lips of many investors. And we ended up, 3.1 positive for Q2. You saw the financials react positively on that. I mean, they've really been beaten down this year quite aggressively. I didn't quite understand why the resource, particularly the precious metal shares, came back. The small cap platinum miners like RB Platts was down 5 or 6% today, when platinum seems to be hitting an all-time high. I know the rand was a bit stronger, but it didn't really explain the price action for me. On the miners. But I think generally I was quite happy with how the day panned out.
Quite happy because the JSE finishing things pretty flat. We had financials seeing a nice boost, and your industrials and resources coming under a little bit of pressure. And kind of escaping, I guess, the wrath that global markets were under today, Valdo. What have you made of our local performance relative to what we've seen on the global scene?
I think the GDP print and then the revised GDP print being a little bit less negative for Q1 gave us that bullish sentiment. You saw a bit of a relief in insurers and financials. It kind of makes sense. And so too the retailers. Okay, Fashini's had a strong trading update. But it's exactly that. It almost feels like a little relief rally. If you go look at the conviction, the book was pretty thin. The order book, that is. I think some people took advantage of potentially starting to maybe sell one or two stocks that had popped up, because you saw the stocks trading about 50 bips down, then to 1% up, and then 1% 1 and 1.5%. They stayed in quite a tight range, which is usually indicative of someone putting the lid on big top 40 stocks.
And Nathan, a little relief rally is pretty much warranted in the current environment, where you've got Fashini on the one side, yes, trading higher today, 6% higher by the close on the back of a very positive trading update. But then within the same space, a retailer like Cashbuild showing that things are still tough out there. Yes, an increase of 3% in its operating profit, but largely on the back of floor space and that being extended.
And of course, measuring 53 weeks against 52 weeks.
Absolutely.
So if you look at the actual performance, of the individual stores, if you take out the floor space and you take out inflation, they're not selling more volume. And that's a concern. I think it's more an indication of what's happening in the mainstream economy, particularly in the low end where Cashbuild operates. But a business like that is going to need to sell more cement and more bricks for us to feel that there's a sustained recovery that could warrant a sustained recovery in the share price. Right now, there's nothing really truly inspiring for investors to buy into a lot of these South African stocks.
Okay, so tricky question then for you, Valdo, within that context. With the rise in volatility, trade tensions and uncertainty, which types of sectors, stocks and defences are you more likely to invest in or sell?
Yeah, so I think, in fact, in those conditions that you've highlighted, I think it's better for investors to look for a business that's got a strong fundamental underpin, that has sort of maybe economies of scale or an advantage in its peer group, because those conditions you mentioned means that investors, or typically global investors who have a small percentage of their portfolio in South Africa, sell South Africa and emerging markets in bulk. So they'll just cut their whole portfolio and add their whole portfolio. We've seen a huge rise in indexation globally, meaning that more and more people are investing based on index benchmarks into South Africa. We saw the MSCI rebalance last week, Tuesday. That had a bigger effect than some of these fundamental results. So my advice would be to go and look at companies that have a strong fundamental underpinned within their sector. They're going to be more defensive. For Sheenies is performing better than Truers, for example. There's going to be your defense right there.
Yeah. Of course, let's take that a step further, Nelson. What sector allocations and portfolio adjustments are you making accordingly?
We have maintained a very defensive outlook. Portfolios have been very rand hedge orientated on the local side. We've increased, because we manage a local and offshore mix, we've increased our allocation to offshore consistently over the last 3 to 4 years. And we're still maintaining an offshore bias. I know the currency has gone out a little bit this year. But nevertheless, I think the outlook on a lot of the large offshore industrial shares in technology or in luxury goods, for example, in Europe, looks a lot more promising than a lot of the South African specific shares.
In that basket, do you consider ratings agencies defensive stocks?
Rating agencies, I would imagine, on paper, defensive stocks. Remember, these guys will charge a company to give them a credit rating, particularly a company that would need to issue bonds or whatever that would require some sort of credit rating. And, even if the economy is tough or good, everybody needs to raise money. These guys charge them for giving them an opinion on their credit worthiness. So I would imagine that they'd be busy in good and bad times.
So with that being said, defensive enough in your books, Valdo?
I think he's hit the nail on the head there. They write business in good and bad times. So never exciting, but never really very disappointing either.
Okay.
So long as they're getting it right.
Which, I don't know. As negative bond yields in the meantime increase through developed markets, and I guess that means effectively decrease, so go more negative, what are the implications of such for global and individual economies?
So I think, the first thing is a lot of people struggle with the concept of negative bond yields. To explain it very simply, in a positive bond yield environment, if you expect to receive your principal payment in 10 years' time of $100, in order for you to receive a positive yield on that, you'd need to pay less than $100. If you paid $100 for it, it would be a 0% yield. Mm-hmm. And if you paid more than $100, then you'd have, by implication, a negative yield. And as that price goes up more and more above $100, the yield becomes more and more negative, as you can imagine. And the only reason that would take place is if investors are sufficiently worried about the mainstream economy that they'd rather park their funds for an extended period of time in an instrument that gives them a slight loss, because the prospects of putting it into other instruments is going to create a bigger loss. So yeah. I think negative bond yields generally are very dangerous if one wants to extrapolate what's going to happen in the economy as such. For me, I think we've got negative yields now in Japan, in Europe, in when I say Europe, I mean largely
Germany
and France, mm-hmm. and in Switzerland, which means that by implication, countries like America, for example, invariably have to lower interest rates, because they're going to have to, otherwise they would effectively import these negative rates from across the Atlantic. So lower interest rates generally would mean that the economy needs some sort of assistance, and I think the U.S. economy doesn't seem like it needs that right now, but certainly the bond market is telling us that we as equity investors need to prepare for much tougher times.
Okay, so a bit of an economics 101 lesson there in a brief. Just taking a look at some of the questions that have been coming through on companies in a very distressed environment right now. Valdo, please explain the huge discount in Avengers share price to its net asset value, NAV, at 13 cents, but share price trading daily between 2 cents and 3 cents. The big discounted rights offer last year was at 10 cents. So first of all, let's put that trading discount under the spotlight.
Yeah, so I think there's two parts to it. Obviously, you need to deconstruct the balance sheet and actually see what is composed of that NAV. As you mentioned, in distressed times, a lot of companies have what appears to be quite a strong net asset value, simply because they're holding what would be a large cash or short-term investments on their balance sheet. If you interrogate that cash and short-term investments, you're seeing a lot of that cash and short-term investments is actually constrained at the moment. okay, which means that that is not available to the investor as such. It can't be paid out as a dividend in time. It is constrained. It's pledged somewhere for a liability, and typically whether it's a bank or a bond issuance. So there can be a difference in the purity of that net asset value. The second is that people are worried that the share is actually not delivering growth and performance on the income statement. So while it looks sound, you have a strong balance sheet, you're actually not doing good cash conversion. You're not returning that to investors.
Okay, so that being said, and with the viewer stacking it up against the likes of a Murray and Roberts, which has an NAV at 13 Rand and the share price closing at exactly at 13 Rand today, is Avengers' share price necessarily simply too cheap?
I think you've got to be very careful when you look at NAV. NAV is not a static thing. It's based on asset valuations, it's based on net liabilities, and of course on operating profit going forward. What the market is saying about Avenge is that Avenge's, if you look at where the share price is right now, is that Avenge's NAV is probably going to come down. In other words, assets are not going to generate sufficient return to cover the cost of liabilities going forward. And, you know, Valdo makes the point, go and have a look at what that cash is going to be used for. It's going to be used for working capital, new projects. Is the return on these new projects going to be sufficiently high enough, you know, to cover liabilities and to grow the business? Right now, it doesn't look like that across many of the construction companies. So I wouldn't use NAV. I mean, as an example, go have a look at Brait's NAV at the best of times was 150 Rand a share, and now it's 40 Rand a share because asset valuations have come down because businesses weren't performing.
Okay, so how are you feeling about Murray and Roberts? Because a viewer says it's looking good with its new order book.
We'll have to see. I mean, a lot of the construction companies that write this business, you know, they make a big deal about the size of their order books to show that they have enough work out there. But the profitability very often is not there. I mean, look at WBHO. You know, it had a massive project with these Australian roads and now seems to be paying money in to get the project built.
A little bit of miscalculation, though, happening on their part.
Absolutely. And, you know, Murray and Roberts had the same problem in Australia, if you remember not so long ago, with that gas project that they did there. They had the same problem with Eskom. They had the problem in the Middle East. And many of the projects that they did, they ended up actually losing money on because that's the nature of construction. It's a low-margin business because it's very competitive. And, you know, if you don't make your targets on time, it can be fatal. I mean, Group 5, not so long ago, lost a lot of money in Zambia in that project that they did there. Was it a gas project, I think? And now they find themselves in business rescue, you know? So construction is a very, very difficult business. And an order book doesn't give me, or a big order book doesn't give me enough comfort that the business is doing okay. It boils down to profitability.
Okay, so let's hit pause on the conversation at this point. We further interrogate the construction space after the break, so keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back, and let's take a quick look at the international markets picture right now. As you can see there, indices stateside trading in negative territory. Still the S&P 500 down close enough to 1%, the Nasdaq pulling back 1.3%, and the Dow 1.4% lower. Across the Atlantic in the meantime, more of the same. FTSE 100 0.2% down, the CAC 40 in the meantime pulling back 0.5%, and the DAX 0.4% in the red. Still with me in studio, Ness and Naya from Sasfin Securities, and Valdo Duplessis from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Before we leave the construction space, I want to take a look at WBHO because Nelson touched on it ahead of the break. What did you make of the numbers on the table today? I was chatting to Mike Wiley a short while ago and highlighting that, yes, you know, it's taken that 500 million rand hit over in Australia. If it weren't for that, it would have reported growth.
Yes, I think we spoke about this last week, Thursday. I mean, you're seeing this a lot. South African companies reporting results, then stating, if we hadn't had done this, and if we hadn't have had this loss, or we hadn't invested in this, our results would be excellent. The reality is, those hits have hit the investor hard. And so, you know, they've got the results post that 500 million does look pretty good, But again, you know, there's an order book, but that order book needs to translate into profitable cash. You know, these construction businesses, as we mentioned before the break, often have to take jobs at almost no margin just to keep paying the fixed cost base of the business. Mm-hmm. Are those projects going to be as profitable as we hope or forecasting? I think the market's discounting that probably they won't be.
Okay, so let's take a look at Afrimat then. I notice a couple of your guests have in the past 3 months spoken highly of Afrimat, mentioning the great management team, etc. In some cases, they even pick it as a stock pick. Looking at the performance, all that it's doing, though, is going down, so it doesn't make sense. How are you making any sense of it, Nathan?
I think if you look at it, the recent performance hasn't been great, but if you look at it over a much longer period of time, understand that, firstly, they're in a tough industry. You know, construction, aggregates businesses, they need an economy that's growing at, you know, 4%, 3%, 4%, not at just 1%. So it's a tough environment that they find themselves in. And from the JSE perspective, you know, mid-small cap shares have been absolutely obliterated. So, you know, for Afrimat to have outperformed those sectors of the JSE, I think, you know, from a money manager's perspective, I think is impressive. It's not one that we hold because we don't like the sector, and we'll probably stay away from it until we get some a much higher GDP growth. But but you know, the fact that these guys have maintained their business and their market share expanded into, I think, iron ore mining, and the results are not that bad, I think is something that's probably commendable.
Okay, so a little bit of a positive tick on that front. Let's take a look at Aspen. The share price did well today. Aspen debt has fallen from 53 billion to 40 billion. Aspen saying that asset sales have reduced its debt pile, and that largely attributed to how it's managed to whittle away at that debt. How are you feeling about Aspen?
I think the debt was largely reduced by the sale of the infant milk formula business to Lactalis. So it was anticipated almost that it should be around there. I think it would have surprised the market if it didn't fall by as much as the value of the sale, which was about 800 million euros or something like that. So I think maybe the market priced in a much more dire set of results than what we anticipated. But the results, I think, were largely what was expected. Still, 40 billion is a lot of debt in a business that's not really growing that much.
So 40 billion worth of debt still on its balance sheet. Are you taking any comfort from the news?
No, I'm not. If you pick apart that balance sheet, there's some serious issues there. I mean, you know, let's be clear. They were pushing up against all sorts of debt covenants. I mean, they were having to do asset sales to almost keep the sharks, if you would, at bay. I mean, there's not much growth there. Still, it's a lot of debt. You know, you could argue that some of the assets on the balance sheet are overinflated. So, yeah, I think they're still pushing up against debt covenants. They're not growing out of debt. They're having to sell stuff to pay it down.
Okay, let's tackle this one because I know Naspers was your stock pick when we last chatted last week. And the question is, once Prosusless, would you invest in them instead of Naspers?
Yes, so we're very active Naspers traders because we're a trading fund. So we're not always in it and we're not always out of it. But obviously this is the process, and bundling is probably one of the biggest JSE events to happen, if you just look at pure market cap. So initially it seems like Prosus will unlock some value in Naspers to the discount. But there's a natural cap and flow. You know, you've got one hole, you've got one glass of water, and you're splitting it into two, and you're adding some friction in between, and now you argue that it should trade at a lower discount to what it did before. It doesn't really make sense. There's only so much value that can go around. So what you will have is you'll have, if Prosus moves up, Naspers will follow, because Naspers will own a minimum of 73% of Prosus. At some point, fundamental investors, let's say Naspers underperforms Prosus by too much. At some point, fundamental investors will say, well, hold on, what is Prosus invested in? It's invested in everything that Naspers is. Naspers still owns it. And so there will come a marginal point where large international investors and global or South African investors will look at the discounts and say, at this point, it makes sense to move back to Naspers. And so you're going to have this ebb and flow backwards and forwards all the time between the two. Initially, yes, we expect some value unlock. long term, I think it'll trade pretty fairly.
Nelson, do you share that sentiment, Prosus versus Naspers?
I think if you look at it all boils down to the discount. I mean, Naspers now owns 100% of Prosus in effect, trades at a discount to Prosus's NAV. And when Prosus lists separately, the question is, will Naspers maintain that discount? Will the discount narrow or will the discount widen? I think Valdo is right. It's gonna move between range. It's a difficult one to call because nobody really knows, you know, how discounts widen, why they widen, and why they narrow. A lot of it has to do with liquidity and trading. But, you know, I'm of the view that it's a lot more complicated from a portfolio management perspective because, you know, to advise clients to sell out on Naspers and put everything into Prosus generates a lot of capital gains tax issues and maybe at the time that you do it, there's insufficient trading in Naspers. So you have to be very careful about making that call.
So it's a lot more complex than on a headline basis. In the meantime, into properties. This share has lost more than 90% in 3 years. The past few days has again seen huge price swings. I've not seen any news beside Brexit woes, of course. Please advise if it's worth a punt already. And I guess this hinging on Brexit with Boris Johnson creating waves of his own in Parliament and pretty much positioning things for a hard Brexit come October, November?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So We've spoken about Inter before. I didn't particularly look at it today. I just saw when I was leaving the office this afternoon, crossing the wires, it was down about 11%. As you mentioned, it's down over 3 years, almost 90%. You know, Inter is facing a lot of headwinds. I mean, the UK market is A, going through Brexit, but B, it's the most online shopped retail space in the world. It has more people shopping online and having those packages delivered to them than people are actually going to the brick and mortar. Secondly, Inter owns some malls on the, you know, sort of last mile, the outer skirts, which are not seeing people come. There's not creative asset management happening. They're having to refinance quite a lot of debt. Those levels and covenants have obviously moved against them. You know, it's starting to yield for a pound stock really nicely. But again, if you go and look at this balance sheet and the net NRV, they call it, the rental income they're collecting, it is struggling from one set of results to the next set of results. And it looks pretty difficult, the situation that they're in.
Okay.
You know, here's an example for you on why not to trust NAV. The last set of results, which was out 2 or 3 weeks ago, they put their NAV at about 40 rand a share. Okay, and where is it now? 6 rand, 5 rand. So, you know, that's trading at a proper discount to NAV, which means the NAV's got to come down. They're going to have to revalue some of that property. And, you know, with retail in the UK where it finds itself right now, and especially with the structural change we're seeing in retail, they'll move to online. Unless you're a high street store down Oxford Street in the middle of London, I would tend to stay away from outlying retail malls. It's just the uncertainty around Brexit is just not worth the risk.
Okay, so that gives us a nice segue into the next question. What will be a good entry point to buy U.S. Amazon?
I think you're never going to get a cheap entry point for Amazon. You do get a little bit of a correction from time to time where it comes down to maybe 1600 or 15 like we saw last year. But if you're a long-term investor, it's one of these things that you're going to have in your portfolio. So even if you want to buy it over a period of 3 months or 6 months, just buy it at regular intervals. You're never going to get to buy Amazon, certainly not in the near term, on a 15 PE multiple like you'd like to.
Is Amazon something you're delving into at all?
No, we're not delving into it. It looks pretty expensive, but for good reason. It's very high quality. So you'd really need to see a correction to get into it because, I mean, they're just innovative. They got an excellent management team. Mm-hmm. They're on the forefront of technology. It's expensive for a reason, but if you didn't get in 2 or 3 years ago, I mean, you've missed quite a run.
Okay, before we get to stock picks, I want to split two stocks amongst you two, AVI and Datatech. Who's taking which?
Okay, I'll do AVI. Probably, in my view, the best run business on the JSE for shareholders. If you look at AVI's history, they regularly focus on shareholder returns, special dividends, very high return on assets, very high return on equity, 27-28%, even in tough times. They've got a reasonably good quality of brands, and they're able to maintain pricing pressure in, you know, fast-moving consumer goods, which is, you know, quite impressive. The brands, I think, are able to price properly. But, you know, recent set of results, what, revenue is up 2 or 3%, things are a reflection more of the economy. But if there's ever a business on the JSE that I'll point to that's really run for shareholders, it's ABI.
ABI. Datatec?
Yeah, so Datatec is one I like. Today, announcement to acquisitions in Europe, yeah, that look pretty sound. There's not much information. It was kind of just headline stuff. It's not cheap, but they've got a strong management team. They're in quite an interesting space in terms of where they sit in delivering value for clients. So it's one I like.
Okay, you like the stocks, but neither of those your stock picks. So let's blitz through them. Valdo, your stock pick this evening.
I'm going to go with Remgro tonight. We've spoken about holding companies. Remgro to me looks like it's trading at one of the widest discounts it's traded to its underlying businesses. Typically, we see that in this kind of market. What happens is the holding company shareholders are not as bullish as the underlying. So typically, you'll see a First Rand, RMH, Mediclinic, RMI make a run. Remgro will lag. As you'll see today, it's the discount's widened past about 22%. Give it a week or two, and you'll see it will catch up.
Okay.
I'm going with Naspers. We've got just a week and a bit for the process listing in Amsterdam. I expect that there will be an unlock of a certain amount of value. So if you haven't gotten in, now's your chance.
Let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Nessun Nayar is with Sasfin Securities and Valdo du Plessis is with Nitrogen Fund Managers. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. I'll do your stock pick this evening.
I'm going to go with Remgro tonight. We've spoken about holding companies. Remgro to me looks like it's trading at one of the widest discounts it's traded to its underlying businesses. Typically, we see that in this kind of market. What happens is the holding company shareholders are not as bullish as the underlying. So typically, you'll see a First Rand, RMH, Mediclinic, RMI make a run. Remgro will lag. As you'll see today, it's the discount's widened past about 22%. Give it a week or two, and you'll see it will catch up.
Okay.
I'm going with Naspers. We've got just a week and a bit for the process listing in Amsterdam. I expect that there will be an unlock of a certain amount of value. So if you haven't gotten in, now's your chance.
Let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Nessun Nayar is with Sasfin Securities and Valdo du Plessis is with Nitrogen Fund Managers. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening.